This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today is October 16, 2014. I welcome you to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday edition, and today we have Justin Klein with me.
Great to be here, Steve.
This is Steve Peasley and Justin Klein on Invest Talk. We're a registered investment advisor for KPP Financial, Inc. And if you listen to this program for very long or any other financial program, you'll hear the name of one of the most famous investors, and of course that's Warren Buffett. And he has earned his renown. He has, really. He has an amazingly successful track record all the way back to the 1950s. He's really a good model to emulate, if you can. Surprisingly, his investment philosophy is not difficult to understand. It might be difficult to implement, but it's not difficult to understand. He is a value investor. He likes fundamentals. He likes a company that make money. He likes companies that has a good profit margin, a good return on equity. Companies he understands. He does not like tech companies at all. But he did recently, I think last year or the year before, bought IBM, and that's a tech company. But
oh, he's owned IBM for a while, but I think IBM's business traditionally has been pretty straightforward. I think it's developing to become more complex. So, but he still holds it.
Yep. So that's Warren Buffett. He also looks at companies with unique products that have a hard to replicate competition. For instance, if you are a Coca-Cola company, you have this huge brand name. By the way, he owns a lot of Coke and has for years and years and years. It's hard to compete with Coca-Cola, especially when they start buying up all the competitors.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot, in today's day and age, it's less to do, I think, with brand, but more to do with distribution and just reach overall. And it's hard to, you know, their Coke is on every store shelf and every convenience store. I mean, it's
and their fastest growing
everywhere.
Division is water, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, not Coke, but water. Anyways, that's the kind of thing that Warren Buffett does. And he has a pretty straightforward philosophy. Okay, stay away from high-risk stocks, invest for the long term, look for potential of appreciation by companies. That's what he does. So can you compete with that? Can you do that? We'll see. This is we try to do that in our investment. Remember, you've heard us. We do not like to overpay for stocks. We also want to look at the fundamentals first, technicals second. So just think about that. It's time to hear from you. You can talk to us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk or in between programs if you want. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is John from Walnut Creek. I have a question that came up on yesterday's show. You were talking about index funds. And my question is, if you're investing for retirement in an IRA, is it better to invest in an index ETF that tracks the S&P 500 or an index mutual fund that tracks the S&P 500? I know the differences of the two, but long term, is there a difference? Is one going to outperform the other? And does a mutual fund or an ETF have higher risks over the long term in terms of volatility? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Now remember, you're saying both are tracking the same exact index, S&P 500. So they will track exactly the same, and the only difference will be costs.
Yeah, the fees that you're charged. And usually, I mean, when ETFs came out, they were pretty much always going to be lower than mutual funds. But mutual funds have seen what their fees are in that space, and they're competing. So a lot of them are getting down to ETF levels, sometimes even lower. So it really depends on, you know, what ETF you're looking at and what mutual fund you're looking at.
Yeah, a mutual fund family that's known for low cost is Vanguard. So yeah. Take a look at their fee structure in their S&P 500, and then go look at the ETF with S&P 500,
yeah,
which is, by the way, SPY as the symbol. And what's the fee? There's always every ETF, and I don't want people to misunderstand this, but every ETF has a fee inside it. Don't think it's just free. It's not. Then you have the trading cost on top of that, which might be small, but it's still a cost. Mm-hmm. Now, in a Vanguard, in many mutual funds, S&P 500, and Vanguard especially, there is no trading cost. But there is a fee. So you just got to compare the fees.
And even on the ETF space, they're competing there as well. The Vanguard has VOO, which is their S&P ETF. And then there's the SPY, which is the Spiders S&P. And that Spiders has 9 basis points expense ratio, 0.09. And the Vanguard one is 0.05.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a little better. Now, you know, year to year, you're not going to see much of a difference at all. And one of the big advantages ETFs have over mutual funds is they're more tax efficient. But when you're talking about an IRA or a 401k, that doesn't really matter very much.
Investing for the long term is a sound idea, but another key element must be added, diversification. And that requires action, you to do something. You can't just set it and forget it. It doesn't work for retirement savings anymore. And we're going to talk about that. It's going to be one of our talking points. Also, we're going to talk about the economic calendar this week. We had some statistics out, and we had some numbers out this morning. We had some numbers out yesterday. I think we just should take a look at them. And I think that it'd be instructive. Also, did you hear the Bullard. He had some comments today about QE. Did you hear about that? Kind of interesting. I think that actually was supportive of the market. We'll talk about that a little bit more. And Chinese banks see debt problems. And why do I say that? Well, you should see what the Bank of Japan is, Bank of China is doing. We'll talk about that. They are doing stuff to protect themselves from bad debt.
Trying to protect themselves.
Well, yeah. But that's what we're going to talk about on the show, if we can. Today, the market was kind of flat. It was down for much of the day and came back in the latter part of the day.
Yeah, the S&P ended up a whopping 0.3. So
yeah.
Pretty much flat. The NASDAQ was up 2.1 points, also pretty much flat. And the Dow was down 24 points. Small caps really had the best day. They were up about 1%, which... You know, it's kind of it's a good indicator that we will at least have a short-term bounce in the market. How well that bounce is, goes and stays, how strong it stays, I think depends to me a lot on the Fed, what the Fed does at the end of the month. Remember, they have a meeting here on the 29th or 28th.
And they have said repeatedly that they'll be out of QE3 by the end of October.
Yeah, so the last day scheduled for them to do QE is the 27th of this month, which is 11 days from now.
Yeah. So we'll see how that works. And the reason why Justin is saying that is you've heard me repeatedly say that the small cap stocks kind of lead.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are up 1% today where the market was pretty much flat.
Yeah, and they were actually stronger yesterday as well, even the day before.
Yep.
Now, part of that you could say is the major indexes are catching up to the Russell, because the Russell 2000, which is a small cap index, has been lagging all year. It's now down 6% or so on the year. And, you know, the S&P is, flat? A little slightly down on the year now,
yeah,
I think?
Yeah, something like that.
So, really, a lot of it, I think, has to do with the S&P just starting to catch up with the realities. But the big question is, you know, if this is it a short-term bounce in the small caps, or is this the low in the market?
Don't know. No one knows that.
Yeah. See, I'm following the junk bond market. The junk bond market's had a good bounce as well. It's how sustainable is it? Is this just every market can get bounces. You know, on the way down, you have bounces. Just like on the way up, you have slight pullbacks like we've had over the past couple of years. And the big question is, are we now entering a bear market, or is this just a one-time correction?
We have got almost a 10% from the very peak of the S&P to the very trough.
It was 9.8%.
It was very close to 10%, which would be qualified as a quote-unquote normal correction. We haven't seen one of those since 2011, the summer.
Yeah.
And that was a 19% correction. But since that time, you know, 5, 6, 7% is 7% was the most we got.
Yeah. If you look at Europe or anywhere overseas, almost, I mean, that's in a bear market.
Oh yeah, they've been
they're
crushed.
In a bear market.
Yeah, they've been crushed.
Yeah.
888-99 chart. There's a new way to get a hold of us. Get in on the conversation. You can answer our Twitter poll. Here's our question: do you believe the market will be up or down by the end of the year? Send it via Twitter now at InvestTalk. You can send it to @InvestTalk. That's with two T's. InvestTalk. You can get your question to us anytime by the old-fashioned way as well, 888-99-CHART.
Coming up this hour on InvestTalk Personal, ready to move for a lower-cost lifestyle? Think south, way south. That's coming up in the next half hour on InvestTalk Personal. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So why can't you just set it and forget it? Why is that not doable anymore? I mean, many years ago when I was starting out in this investment world, you bought things and just held it forever. You never thought about doing it.
Well, it's because we were in what was called a secular bull market from 82 to 2000. And ever since 2000, we've been in a secular bear market, even though people might say we've entered the secular bull market. I would argue against it. But, you know, it's
ever since 2009, it has been in an upward momentum. And until we break a 20% downstroke below that, more than that, we're still in a bull market phase, I think. Even though I've been arguing that, you know, a lot of experts say anything below the 200-day moving average on all the indexes is a bear market, and we are.
Yeah, we're there on the S&P.
You're there on the Dow. You're there on the NASDAQ. You're there everywhere you can look. You are now below the 200-day moving average.
Yeah.
Now, not a lot, but you are. Yeah. So is that a bear market?
Well, the big question, you know, what we're talking about here is, can you set it and forget it?
Well, you
can't. You know, I think for a lot of people, they wish they could.
Yeah.
The big problem is our bear markets. You know, the last 5 years, people forget about volatility, but equity markets are inherently volatile.
Yeah.
And volatility on a regular basis is actually healthy for the market. It's not healthy for a market to go up and up and up and march continuously up, because what happens is people forget about risk and they start taking bad risks.
Much more risk than they should.
They much more risk than
they
should.
Because they don't see it as risky.
Yeah, because they say, oh, well, it's been fine over the last 2-3 years and this is the area of the marketplace I want to be, like junk bonds. You know, people buy junk bonds and they think this is great because I get this great yield, and you haven't seen any volatility until all of a sudden the Fed stops QE, and now junk bonds have gone down about 10-12%, and all of a sudden that 6% yield that they were getting isn't nearly as attractive when you're losing 10% in 5 months.
Yeah. So the problem with portfolios is they get out of balance. You know, if you set up a balanced portfolio and then one sector takes off and another falls down and all of a sudden you have a jumble of too much risk in some places and not enough risk in others, so you got to rebalance it and to maintain your diversification. That's another issue that means you can't just set it and forget it.
Yeah, and another thing is when you actually get towards retirement, or maybe you just get to amount of money that you need for retirement, maybe you're still well off, you're still 10 years from retirement and you want to still work, then you actually need to change your portfolio, change your risk number, and get your portfolio conservative. And a lot of people don't know how to do that.
I invite you to become an InvestTalk Insider. There's no cost, but it can be worth it. It can be worth a lot. There's a regular flow of good information, and you have access to our library of informative webinars if you are an InvestTalk Insider. Sign up at InvestTalk.com. That's with two T's. Reach out to the phone. Give us a call. We want to talk to you. 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you'd like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you.
You're listening to Invest Talk, the fees that people pay. Did you know, on average, investors pay 0.65% of the value of the fund per year for bond funds and 0.89% for equity funds? Got questions about investing fees? Talk to Steve about it. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. Are you a podcast listener? There's no reason you can't get in sync with the program. Call us anytime at 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. If you'd like to subscribe for free, you can do that on iTunes. If you have a question for us, you can ask anytime you want, 888-992-4278.
Well, hello, Steve and Justin. This is Jerry John, podcast listener from Ogden, Utah. I've been interested in a set of data that you comment often on, which is shares purchased or issuing new shares, particularly for master limited partnerships as well as REITs as a means by which to increase capital and, moreover, give concern for quote-unquote Ponzi schemes. Is there a good source with which to find out how to issue, where and when companies have issued shares? I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you much for all that you do, gentlemen. Have a wonderful day.
Now, of course, we buy data and we get that information, so you're asking for where you can find it on the internet that's free.
Yeah, I mean, they do have to disclose it. So yeah. There are Yahoo Finance. There's always, you know, 10-Ks and reports that come out
right.
That you could read. Now that obviously gets to be a little bit of work. You know, a lot of people like it just straight in their face. FinViz.
I wonder if they have that.
I don't think
FinViz
so.
Is a FinViz.com is a free website that has a lot of information. And I'm just wondering if they have that kind of information. I wouldn't be surprised because it's such a massive amount of data that they provide for free. So I'm thinking that it might be there, and that might be a place for you to look. The FinViz is FinViz.com.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably say that the best to me is would be just Morningstar.
But for free?
That's free. The key ratio tab. Has all of, is free, and it has all their revenues for the past 10 years, and also has shares outstanding, and you can see whether those shares are rising or falling. You know, so now obviously that's not going to tell you month over month, quarter over quarter, but it will tell you year over year how much those shares outstanding are changing. And if those shares outstanding are going up, means that they're issuing more shares to increase their capital base so that they can either pay out a dividend or invest in their business or whatever they're doing with that cash, but you can see whether they're increasing the number of shares outstanding or decreasing it.
That's on Morningstar.com and under key statistics.
Key ratios
or key stats or something like that. Yeah. Key ratios. So that's where you can find that. 888-992-4278. Today we had economic information. Yesterday we had retail sales. Retail sales yesterday we reported for September were down 0.3%. They expected it to be down 0.2%. And the month before, and that was for September, and the month of August was up 0.6%. And that kind of put a damper on the market. The market already was kind of on a downside, but that did not help. Today, we had different statistics. I mean, we also had yesterday inflation numbers. PPI yesterday, that also put a damper because it fell to -0.1%. That's deflationary. That's not inflation. That's deflation. They expected it to be up 0.1%. It was flat the month before. And this morning, we had a little bit better news. Industrial production was up 1%. They were only expected to be up 0.4%. And last month, it was down 0.2%. And we had the weekly unemployment claims for job unemployment claims fell sharply today to 260,000 or so. So those were kind of positive for the market. The earnings have been decent. Remember, we're right in the middle of earnings season here. Mm-hmm. The earnings have been pretty good. Did you see Google's disappointed after hours?
Yeah, they missed a little bit. I don't think they were down about 6% after hours.
Yeah, so Google was a little disappointing. Netflix was disappointing yesterday. But there's been others that have been surprisingly good. I still think we don't know exactly
how. Intel's was a little disappointing. I know eBay. eBay.
Oh yeah, eBay was a little disappointing, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were down about 4%, 5% today. So you know, it's really, I think it's kind of been a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. I think overall, you know, the number one thing, and I keep harping back to it because I really think it's that important, is how much liquidity can, lack of liquidity can the market handle, you know, with the Fed leaving, and, you know, earnings can do whatever they want to do, but if the junk bond markets continue to decline, it really doesn't matter too much what earnings do in the past quarter, because it's always going to be about what's going forward. And if companies aren't be able to borrow as easily as they have been, earnings going forward are going to be bad.
Yeah, and you got to look at junk bonds versus the quality bonds. What's happening is money's coming out of the junk bonds and money's going into the quality bonds, and that's why you have the treasuries going up and yields going down.
Yep.
So everybody's leaving the
riskier
non-quality,
side.
Yeah, the riskier assets and junk bonds.
Because they're realizing that the junk bonds companies that have issued these junk bonds, they're not very good credits. They're not very good companies, and they aren't going to be able to pay back their shareholders or their bondholders unless someone else lends them more money. And when there's nobody else to lend them more money, then that becomes a big issue if you're holding their bonds.
We have one time slot left. I will be in San Jose on October 22nd in the San Jose satellite office. Also, I'm taking appointments for individual reviews in our Dana Point office right now in Southern California, October 29th. Glenn is standing by for us in San Mateo. We're going to talk to him next. And with that, we would literally love to talk to you on InvestTalk.
This is InvestTalk, and we're glad you value this hour with us. Once again, here's Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
888-99-CHART. That's the number you can reach us. We'd love to talk to you. We're going to talk to Glenn in San Mateo. Thanks for waiting, Glenn. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How's everything going with you guys?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the market was pretty crazy today, but I kind of got scared a little bit with the earnings on Blackstone going out this morning. I wanted to see what your thoughts were in regards to their numbers and maybe an outlook, because they dropped a good ways down this morning. They came back.
Well, Blackstone, everybody, Blackstone Group provides global alternative asset management and financial advisory services. They're quite large. It's a $15 billion company. And they have good numbers, good sales increases quarter over quarter for the last couple of years, good earnings. I'm not sure why in 2013 they made $1.98, and then 2014, this year, they're supposed to make $3.59. That's an 80% increase. Did they buy something? That kind of leads me to believe they might have bought something.
Well, they bought a lot. Blackstone was one of the biggest buyers of residential real estate.
Were they?
To rent out. They're really a private equity firm. This is an area of the market that I'm extremely worried about. I mean, it topped out. I follow the PSP, which is the private equity ETF, and this thing topped out months ago in June, and really has been getting crushed ever since. And so this is an area where it should be less volatile, right, because they pay a lot of dividends, but it hasn't been. And a lot of their counterparts have been struggling as well. Now, Blackstone is doing better than some of the other ones, but to me, this is all about, once again, the junk bond market, and that's what private equity firms live on. They live on being able to finance themselves, finance deals cheaply and easily. And if the junk bond market continues to be weak, so will the whole private equity sector and Blackstone as well.
Now, Blackstone is a very good company. They pay a 5.9% dividend. Mm-hmm. They're kind of on the inexpensive side. It's all about the future, because they've done very, very well. And I would wait till you see strength in the chart before you step into almost anything at this point. Mm-hmm. You want to see some strength in the chart.
Do you own it?
My position is I own a boatload, I'm just concerned about.
I would not be owning a boatload.
You might want to cut back, cut back to just a reasonable amount, 3 to 5% of your portfolio. Don't ever load up on any one thing because you just never know.
Yeah, when you say a boatload, what percentage of your portfolio is it?
Probably 50%.
Oh, sell quickly.
Yeah, you gotta dump some of that.
Yeah, this is not the stock that you want to be. This is, I know you probably love that yield, and that's probably why you piled into it. But you know, this is a sector that is historically very, very volatile. You know, it IPO'd right near the peak in 2007. And really, that's when the private equity sector peaked out, and it started at $30, went all the way down to $5. So this is do that again.
You don't think it's solid where it's stable?
No. This is not a blue chip name. This is a very, very fickle company, fickle industry. Well, like I said, when liquidity goes away and it's harder to borrow shares, this whole sector is going to get crushed. And you know, the Fed could keep it going, and they could print more, and they could keep the bond market, the junk bond market, afloat. But that's not something I would be betting 50% of my portfolio on.
Yeah, Glenn, too much risk. Thanks for the call, Glenn. Appreciate it.
BX is the symbol, Blackstone Group.
Let's go to James in New York. How you doing, James?
I'm good. How are you today?
Thanks. I'm doing great. Thanks for calling, for listening to us on as a podcaster.
Always. Thank you.
What can I do for
you? I had a question today. It applies to the myth or rumor, popular belief that I've heard, if you have saved $100,000 by the age of 30, that is sort of like a rule of thumb for you to be at a very good place in terms of retirement savings. Now, I don't know whether or not you subscribe to that belief, or, I mean, obviously, we're going to continue saving regardless of that. But I was just wondering where that measures up. Is that, how true is that?
Well, you can use a rule of thumb that we like to use. About every 7 to 10 years, you figure that money should double. Now, that's not going to be consistent. But if you do that, let's say 10 years at 40, you're at $200,000. At 50, you're at $400,000. At 60, you're at $800,000. At 70, you're at $1.6 million. I don't know if that's – I never heard of that rule of thumb. Have you ever
heard of that rule of thumb. Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I mean, the big question is, how many 30-year-olds can save $100,000?
Yeah, not too many have that kind of money.
Yeah, that's a really tough thing to do, especially nowadays when most of the time you're leaving college with some sort of college debt, and you know, for fresh out of college, you're not really going to make a lot of money. So
if you have $100,000 at age 30, you got to give yourself kudos.
Yeah.
That's difficult to do.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean that you're out of the woods and you don't have to worry about anything. Yeah, you have to continue to save, and you have to invest that money correctly to get that doubling, like Steve said, of your underlying assets. But that's a great start.
Yeah. I wouldn't be comfortable saying that, I'm set now, because I wouldn't be comfortable saying that, James. Okay?
No, absolutely not. I was just wondering, you know, that is a very good thing.
If you've done it, have you done that, James? Did you do that? You got $100,000 at
30? Yes. I'm not 30, but yes, I'm 28.
Then you need to pat yourself on the back, because that's hard to do. Most people are busy paying off, as Justin said, student debt or just getting started.
Right.
And you know, and young people have a habit of spending everything they earn because they wanted a new car and new toys and all that stuff. So you've done very, very good, and you need to be proud of yourself. I mean, there's not too many people.
Yeah, you're the 1% of 28-year-olds.
And I talk to a lot of people. I have people in their 60s who don't have $100,000. You know, I talk to. Congratulations.
So the compound interest for me, you know, that's a good thing. I mean, in time, obviously, that money's putting to work at an early age, and I'm at now.
Yep. That's a very good thing.
It's going to be good.
Yeah,
very
good thing. You just got to invest it wisely.
James, congratulations. Thanks for the call. We're going to talk about InvestTalk Personal, the day-to-day money decisions that can have a lasting impact on your financial health. If you haven't saved enough by retirement, like James has already, $100,000 at 30, I'm pretty impressed with that.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have to lower the cost of your lifestyle, aren't you? You're going to have to live somewhere cheap. And a growing number of developing countries are enticing retirees with perks of all kinds. Travel and health care discounts, tax breaks. For instance, Panama. Panama offers discounts on utility, doctor bills, and even gives cheaper mortgages. Ecuador. Seniors 65 and older get sales tax refunds in Ecuador. Half-price bus, half-price plane tickets, front-of-the-line privileges. Nicaragua. Now, I'm not saying you want to live in these places. I'm just saying, if you have a monthly pension of Social Security income of $600 a month, they are very welcoming. And you know, for Panama, you know Panama uses U.S. dollars, right, as their currency. So you don't have to worry about that part.
It's just something people should probably think about.
Yeah, especially if you don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you're living on Social Security, and you know, that might be a hard decision, but it might be a wise decision to live more comfortably. And Panama is a very good place as far as I'm concerned, because they speak English there and they use.
And there's some nice places. You ever seen House Hunters International?
Oh yeah. Panama's nice.
I've seen that show a couple times. It's pretty. There's some nice places out there. You would. A lot of people think, oh, I got to live in one of these. Yeah. They think of third world countries. A lot of them are pretty nice. Depends on where you're living, obviously, within the country. But it's something that I think people should have an open mind to, especially if they don't have a lot of ties. You know, family ties that tie them to one particular place.
Yep, you have a small stipend to live on.
Yeah,
you consider.
You know, if you only have $300,000 in when you hit retirement, you know, here in America, that's not going to get you very far. But that might get you to, you know, the rest of your life in another country.
That's Invest Talk and Personal, everybody. If you have a question about this topic, give me a call 888-99-CHART. Or you can ask me online too if you want. Just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
This tool measures your capacity for risk. Try our free risk analyzer. It can tell you if you match up with your retirement portfolio. Takes just about 3 minutes. It's there for you to use on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Fed Bullers, he's one of the Fed presidents that's on the Federal Reserve. Remember, there's 12 of them. 9 of them vote. And everybody talks about the chairman, which is Janet Yellen, but she's not all by herself. She's just the chairman of the board. She's got voting members that vote on things. And he talked today about QE. Remember, we're in QE3. We've been cutting it $10 billion a month, basically, for, I don't know, what, 7 months
now? Since the beginning of the year,
now.
Basically.
Yeah, and we're supposed to be done, according to the Fed, they're going to be out of QE by the end of October. And he suggested that maybe the Fed should extend QE and not get out so quickly. That's the first time you heard any of that from any of the Feds that I've heard. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that do? What will that do? That keeps the liquidity in the market. Why is they're so worried about it? They're worried about inflation, the lack of inflation.
The big question is $15 billion enough? So if you stay at 15, you increase it or do you keep it?
Yeah, 15 is not nearly as much as it.
Yeah, it's compared to $85 billion they were doing all of last year.
Would it do any good?
Yeah, $15 billion, it's better than none, you know, when you're talking about liquidity in the marketplace, but is that enough to stem the tide?
And I would suggest that it's not. And they're also worried about Europe, because Europe appears to be in recession. Mm-hmm. No one's really made that clear, but it certainly seems like that's what we're seeing there in Europe. In recession, and all over the world, prices are falling. Commodity prices are falling. Look at oil.
And you're seeing a lot of the areas of the bond market, like I talked about the junk bond market, but also the sovereign debt market. Look at Greece's bonds have hit 9%. They were down to 5%, 5%, 6% just a month or two ago. And so the Greek market is getting crushed as well. So you're starting to see the trades on the back of Fed liquidity starting to reverse, and you're seeing, I think, a replay of the European debt crisis. I think you're seeing the beginning of the replay.
Yeah, they never, you know, they never got out of that structural debt crisis they were in. They just was kind of...
They masked it with more debt. You can't fix a debt problem with more debt.
More debt. It doesn't work that way. And the structural changes that are required in many of the EU countries have not really been embraced.
Nope.
They don't want to. So what's going to happen? I can see their cost of their debt starting to creep back up. And I can see it getting even much worse than it is now. Mm-hmm. Much worse. And it got really, really inexpensive. But now that they're going into recession, they need to get more money for their sovereign debt. Maybe the investors need more money. Anyway, something to think about. QE, is it out? Are we going to see QE4? If our market goes down and our economy starts to roll over, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know what the form of QE4 would be, but I could see it happening if our market and our economy starts to roll. Okay, got a question for us before the end of the program? Use our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
This is Don. I'm from Endicott, New York. I'm a podcast listener. I had a question on the stock GLNG. That's Golar LNG Limited. I was wondering if this was a way to get in on the gas, on the natural gas market, and also if it is, at what price do you think would be a good way to get in on this? I'll be listening. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, just a quick look at the stock. I don't like it. Provides international marine transportation services for liquefied natural gas with a fleet of 16 vehicles. It's a $4.5 billion company whose sales have been falling every quarter for the last six quarters. Sales. The last two quarters, earnings have gone negative. Now, they're going to lose 5 cents this year, and they say the estimate for next year they're going to rebound to $1.11 earnings. Is it worth $48?
Nope.
No way. And it does only $21 million in sales a quarter.
Looks like a good short to me.
And it's a $4.5 billion company that only does $21 million a quarter?
Yeah, and it got a little bounce the last couple days, but I think that's more of a technical bounce than something sustainable. I mean, this is a company, 2 years ago, they had operating profits or operating cash flow of $234 million. Well, the trailing 12 month, that's down to $25 million. So it's down almost 90% from 2012, and their capital expenditures are exploding from $343 million to over $1 billion. So they're making less money as they're putting a lot more money into their business and a business that's less profitable. So
don't think they can maintain that 3.7% dividend yield, and they've been issuing stocks, it appears.
There's shares outstanding. Have gone from about 67 million in 2010 to 85 million in the last 12 months. So, and they're issuing more debt. Their financial leverage has gone up from 1.37 to 1.52 over the past couple of years. So this is not a company that I would be.
Don't own it. Don't buy it. We're closing in our last segment of the day. Do you have a question about one of our topics or a call that we need? You want some question answered? Give us a call. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. This is Invest Talk.
Now is a good time to call Invest Talk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on Invest Talk. Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, with the stock market's recent volatility, we're forced to think of Plan B. Exactly how should we react? Buy or wait when prices drop? That's our talking point for Friday, October 17th, and we hope you'll listen to that podcast. If you have a question for Steve or Justin, you can ask it anytime at 888-99-CHART, and they'll answer it on the next podcast.
This is the Thursday, October 16th edition of Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. With the stock market's recent volatility, we're forced to think of Plan B. Exactly how should we react, buy or wait when prices drop? That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. Please join us then. Of course, there's still plenty of time to join in today. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, there's, you know, there's been, we've been talking about, I don't know, for maybe 2 years about the debt issues in China. Ever since the financial crisis, they have greatly increased the amount of debt in China. That was their stimulus. And there's a lot of, debt on that is not transparent. But there's a lot of debt on the banks' book balance sheets as well. So why am I even bringing this up? Because this is going to be a big problem for China, and it's already starting to be a problem. And the Bank of China is planning a huge share sale of $6.5 billion to offshore investors. Why do they need $6.5 billion? Because they have bad debt. They're trying to produce or create a capital cushion so that their bank, the Bank of China, will have enough money to survive this debt problem that they have. And just so you know, corporations in China have 5.4 times more leverage than they ever have been ever. And they've taken that, most of that leverage, in the last year or two. So it's increasing. Just in, I wrote notes. They are lending, just in September, two corporations have borrowed money, $26.8 billion in 1 month, September. In August, it was $11.8 billion. So they're increasing their leverage when it's already at record levels.
And it's on the corporate level and in the real estate sector as well. So it's a kind of a double whammy.
And you add to that, they just had another real estate holding company, a property company called Agile, I can't say the name. They're a $20 billion construction company. Their chairman is under house arrest, and apparently there's massive debt that they don't have the money to pay off. And that's on top of a couple of months ago when Zhonghu something real estate company collapsed. That was another multi-billion dollar real estate empire that collapsed.
Yeah, and the regulators are trying to stem the tide, but it's been so
starting
minor
to build momentum.
They're trying to loosen the lending for a little bit to try to help the sector, but it's not to turn around prices. It's just to stem the tide a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's not really helping that much.
Yeah, bad debt is bad debt. You can refinance it. Yeah, but these companies are going to go under. The banks, of course, obviously, the Chinese banks, they're issuing a huge amount of equity so they can produce some cash. So think about what that means in the future. They're trying to anticipate more bad news coming in. Now, the problem is it's not going to be very transparent to us because it's pretty much a closed society. We won't get to see it that clearly.
But you can see that they're having issues, and I don't think it's going to get much better.
No. No. Let's get one more call in before the end of the day. 888-99-CHART. Chris called with a question in Southern California.
Hi, guys. When you add value to a stock, like for instance, when you say X stock is worth 32 and whatever shares, you know, when you add value to a stock, what are you calculating? I guess you're estimating how high it's going to go, and I'm just curious as to what are you calculating. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, we're not estimating how high it's going to go. That's not what we're doing. When we calculate a value of what we think the value of a stock, what we're doing is using a lot of different statistics and say this stock is worth a certain amount of money, and it all boils down to earnings, growth of earnings, how much money they're going to make this year, how much money they're going to make next year, how fast are they growing, what kind of P.E. ratio in the sector that they're in usually gets. Mm-hmm. Though there's a lot of different factors involved here.
Yeah,
how much debt they have.
And a company can be undervalued, but it can stay undervalued for a long time.
Years.
Or vice versa. Can stay overvalued.
How about Apple? Apple's been undervalued in relationship to all the other tech stocks for years.
And Amazon. Amazon's been overvalued in relationship to its earnings, which
for years
haven't been very much. you know, the market values it based on its sales, but not earnings. So, you know, the market can view a different company very differently than you view it or I view it. And remember, values, when you put a value on a stock, that's just the number that we, it's our best guess, and just like your value is your best guess.
Before we close for the hour, InvestTalk insiders receive weekly advisories on important investing topics along with free access to our library of webinars. And there's much more there, too. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley with Justin Klein. And for everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow on InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.